All right, welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 91. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Yo.
And we actually both made it to the theater, and we both went to see a new horror film called Don't Breathe. And we're going to go probably a little in-depth on it since we both saw it.
Yeah.
I think we'll try to do, because I do kind of want to talk some spoilers on it. We'll do, like, general and then a spoiler spoiler discussion after that.
Sure.
That works for you?
Yeah, that works.
All right, man. So hit me up.
All right.
I have no idea your reaction to this movie. We have not talked about it at all. So
yeah.
Why don't you get us the ball rolling, Chris?
So Don't Breathe is horror film, as Jeff said. I don't know, horror thriller type film, I guess. It focuses on this group of, like, I guess, like, early 20-somethings, maybe mid-20-somethings, that are robbing houses and kind of, like, stealing stuff from them. And they're sneaking in. Like, they have an in through a security company that one of them has a relation to. And so they're ripping off these houses. The one girl, trying to think, Rocky,
yeah.
She seems like she has a bad home life. Like, her and her daughter are in a bad spot. They don't go into it very deeply, but it's just kind of, like, implied some bad shit's going on. She wants to get out. She wants to be done with this. So they come across this intel that there's this house that might be holding on to some cash, and they scout it out, looks good, and they decide they're going to hit it up, except that it is the home of a blind man.
Well, that's the cherry on top, right?
Yeah, so it's like the easy one, right? Like,
yeah,
it's almost too perfect, where this house is in the middle of, like, this rundown neighborhood in the city. Like, there is nobody else living on this block except for this man. He's blind, and it has a pile of cash inside. So what could go wrong? They go in, and quickly shit goes awry. And from there, it just kind of becomes this tense situational thriller where, you know, they're trying to escape from this house and this guy, and as the movie continues, you learn more about him, and this is a more horrific situation than what you originally may have envisioned. Although the opening, I think, sells it a bit that something's going on, which we'll talk to briefly in a little bit. But yeah, I think you kind of know that maybe this guy isn't what they think he is. And I mean, it's a fun little horror film. There are problems with it, for sure. I enjoyed it quite a bit, though. Once you get past kind of the issues on the surface, I just, like, all right, yep, I'm all right with this. And they do something that very early on, one of the three of this crew dies, and he is, like, the least likable of them. So
yeah,
like, them killing him off, it's like, all right, I can kind of get behind these other two at least a little bit. And it gets a little wonky. There's a pretty sick twist going on towards the end, and well, I guess towards the middle. And then even more towards the end, it gets a really bit uncomfortable. And I don't think it ends super strong, but
yeah,
I don't think the actual ending, I don't think, is very good. But
yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's a typical horror movie ending.
Yeah, like, oh, we have to, like, set this up for maybe a sequel. Like, don't breathe in the city. Yeah. Like, I think that that this is a movie that maybe we don't need a sequel to. Like, it's fine as a standalone film. You didn't need to kind of continue it on. But yeah, overall, I liked it quite a bit. I did read your Facebook post on it, so
okay.
I do kind of
so you know your my thoughts a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah. I think it's good. Like, it's a good movie. It's very, you know, it's competent. It's well made, right?
Right.
I think that the villain is pretty great in it. The guy in the house, the blind guy. He's just a terrifying presence. I wish he talked more.
Yeah.
I don't know why I wish he talked more, because I think the guy's a good actor. So, like, I wish he got to do more. You know what I mean?
They very much try to give him that kind of, like, he does talk at points, but for the most part, he's kind of that, like, silent, stalky killer. Which he does very well.
But when he finally does talk, I was like, man, thank God. I thought he wasn't going to talk through this whole thing. It's that late into the movie when he finally talks. So we were like, oh, okay. He finally is. Yeah, it's good. I mean, it has a great premise. Like, if you went into this movie not knowing what it was about, like, you're going to be like, wow, this is cool. You know, we kind of know from the trailers that, like, okay, this guy's more dangerous than you think.
Right.
Although, that said, the movie itself kind of spoils things a little bit at the beginning with its opening shot. It kind of zooms it on the street, and it's near the end of the movie, and then it flashes back. Like, I don't get...
Yeah, I don't understand.
I wish they didn't do that.
Why they opened that. I think they should have just opened with the first robbery that they show. Like,
yeah, yep.
And then there's kind of... Then you can have this sympathy towards the blind man, which could then turn real quick, because there's nothing to really celebrate about the three that are breaking into this house. Like, they are here to steal someone's stuff. Like, regardless of, you know, what situations the three of them are in, they're still here to, you know, commit a crime. And they're not like to be, you know, championed.
It's like they're kind of sympathetic because of the situation that they're living in Detroit.
Right.
They're looking for trouble and they find it. You know what I mean? Yes. They're doing bad things and something bad happens to them. I don't know. Yeah. This movie, like, I went in expecting it to be blown away by it, and I came out going, well, that's an entertaining, like, very well-crafted, like, mainstream horror film. Away with it. But main takeaway, which you already saw my Facebook reaction, was this is Green Room Light. This is, like, very similar movie to Green Room about people trying to escape from a building, right?
Right.
And just the whole time I was watching it, I was like, man, that they made is the opposite of what Green Room, like, Green Room was just like, it's smart, like, it respected how smart you were, and this was just kind of like the dumb mainstream version of that a little bit, especially with some of the twists and some of the stuff near the end where I was like, come on now, are you serious?
I don't know. There is, I guess we're going to get kind of like into spoilers here, but there is a scene with a turkey baster, and I know that you seem to think it was a bit goofy. I kind of liked it. Like, I liked the turnaround on it. And she jams it into his throat.
Come on. It's silly. Like,
it is. It's goofy, but it did give me like, it did bring me up a minute there, like, because it's like it takes this dour turn once you find out what is in his basement. And then as it progresses and you find out why he was keeping this other person hostage down there, and now what he wants from Rocky in return, and then, you know, we're kind of talking around it here, but like, there's a turkey baster involved, so take a guess.
We can go full spoilers in a minute.
Yeah,
I'm perfectly willing to go in depth on that in a minute. Like, just absolutely say what it is. But It's goofy. It got the biggest reaction out of the audience, though. Like, that was of the whole movie. The audience fucking went ape shit when he got the baster shoved in his mouth. Like,
it's a fun. It's stupid, but it's something that it's something you could actually cheer for, because I think at that point the movie had taken such a downward turn, like in terms of like. There seemed at that point very little hope at all going forward.
Yeah.
So that scene there is like, all right, finally, like, even well, though maybe you shouldn't be cheering for them.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. It was a nice turnaround on
right.
him, right? Like
yeah.
But that's the thing is it's an audience satisfying fun mm-hmm. moment. Green Room doesn't do that for you. I mean, it actually has satisfying moments, but it's not like, here you go, here's your money shot. Like, I don't know, like.
I don't know. I think there's a lot in Green Room. There's a couple money shots in Green Room, but it's not as explicit as in this.
Well, the characters do turn it around on the people that are coming after them, and it's very fun and satisfying in the end where she's, like, right. hiding in the couch. She sneaks out of the couch. But this is just like a big dumb, hey, let's get the whole audience to fucking, you know, get yeah. a huge reaction out of the audience. The other thing with me is I saw the twist coming. I knew what the twist was going to be in the basement because it was in the trailer, kind of. I don't know if you caught that, but they show a woman down in the basement in the trailer. So, like, I already had a very strong feeling that something was going on in the basement.
Well, I knew something was going on in the basement. I wasn't quite sure what they were going for. I actually went in thinking that this was going to go supernatural at some point. And it definitely stays very grounded.
Like, and here's another thought. Throw this out there. What if there wasn't that twist? And what if this guy wasn't a bad guy? Wouldn't that be slightly more interesting if this is just a guy whose house was broken into and he's going to fuck these people up? And he's not a monster. He's just, you know, he's a vet. He can fuck people up. Like, I think that would be a more complex and challenging movie than what we get where you go, oh, this guy's actually just a monster.
I don't see that working. Like, all right, so he's killed the one guy. He finds out there's two other people in his house. Why wouldn't you just call the police? Why wouldn't you set off the alarm? Like, why wouldn't you do a host of things?
Well, he's slightly off. He's living in an abandoned neighborhood. He's living in, like, he's fucked up in the head. You know, he's
sure, but he's not so fucked up in the head that he doesn't have, like, he obviously, you know, still pays his bills, like, because he has electricity. He still pays his, like, security bills because he has the security system. Like,
yeah, like,
there's things, like,
he's functional.
Yeah, there's things there. Like, I don't know if he would just hunt these people down and kill them. Like,
I guess it does give him a motivation. That's true.
Like, he doesn't want the police there because of what's.
Well, what if the motive? I guess. Yeah, he could always have called the police. I was gonna say, what if the motivation was they have his money, and he doesn't want to let them out, but he could easily just call the police. I guess
you're right. But it's like, all right, I'm gonna find a way to lock you in, because like that's the thing, right? Is so he gets them in the basement, and he basically like is able to lock them in. He's able to put them
yeah.
and keep them in the basement. Like at that point, you just call the police. Like instead of like
yeah, yeah.
Like the reason for him to be in the basement is because of what he has in the basement, money or not. Like he is concerned about the money. That is very clear. But
yeah, that's a good point.
But yeah, I mean, it would have been a very different movie if that had been what was going on.
Yeah,
and so it would have been very interesting.
Yeah, we'll go full spoiler in a second, but I just want to say, like, I'm coming down a little hard on it, I guess, but, like, there are things I think are great. I think the basement sequence is great when the lights go out, and he's able to move around in the dark better than them. I thought that the stuff with like the dog chasing him around was really great, especially when he's like chasing through the ventilation. Oh, yeah.
That dog ventilation was fantastic. There's some great shots.
I thought the Cujo's like,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
There's
at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and very smart, like the way she works it and,
yeah, very clever.
And then it's like, oh, she did it. She got away. And then they kind of clamped down on that too. So it's like,
yeah. All right. So I guess full spoilers, everybody. So if you haven't seen it, fast forward a couple minutes.
Yeah.
Go about 5 minutes. Turkey based here.
Yeah.
The turkey based here. He has, all right, first off, what's in his basement? It's the girl who killed his daughter in a car.
Yes. Accident.
He's got her chained up down there, prisoner.
And she is pregnant with a new child for him. That is kind
of one thing I thought was
premise here.
Yeah, what I thought was really cool is when he accidentally shoots her, he has this very emotional reaction. You're like, what? Why? You know?
Yeah.
And then you figure it out. Oh, well, she was carrying his baby. So his plan was, this girl has to pay for what she did to his daughter, and she has to give him a new daughter or a new kid. So then when that falls apart, character Rocky, and he strings her up, and he's got some sperm frozen, and he, like, melts it and puts it in a turkey baster, and he cuts her pants open, and he's going to stick it in her.
Yeah.
It's just a gross out gag. I thought
it's foul.
It's just a thing to get a reaction. Yeah, it's a thing to get a reaction out of the audience. To me, like, and then she gets out and she turns around on him, and it is a satisfying thing. She like shoves the thing in his face.
Right. Yeah. It's and, so goofy, but it is super satisfying.
Yeah, and as I'm watching it in the theater at the time, it was a satisfying moment, but it's like, already now, looking back on it, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how much I love that. Like, because it makes the movie goofier than it has to be, I think.
Sure, you could have done without that scene. You could have just cut that 15 seconds and moved on, and it still would have been fun.
Yeah, but then you don't have the big moment that everyone walking away from the movie is going to talk about.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I'm very more conflicted on it than I thought I would be. And like you said before, the ending, they set up this thing where he's still alive and he's still out there. And it's like,
yeah, that's.
I forgot. I was listening to another podcast. They're like, what is he going to do? Like, come out there and try to find her out in the world? Like, he's probably not very effective.
Right, like, because
he knows his house.
Wait, he knows his house. He knows his area that he lives in because it's open. But he doesn't do well with sound. Like that's they point that out in the movie, like where they use sound to kind of beat him, they set off the alarm. Man. So like noise kind of disorients him in a way. So yeah, what does he do? I mean,
he's not like a superhero.
Right. Like, he doesn't have superpowers. Down. He's just, like, you just set it up that.
It's good because it's his house.
I mean, what do you do with a sequel to Don't Breathe? You just have, like, another one in that same house? Like,
that's the only way you make it work, and that's why you don't do it, I think. Like, just don't.
Yeah.
Do something else.
I mean, and it's doing pretty damn well, you know, at the box office for what it is. Because it was a $10 million movie, and it's made like $35 as of now.
Yeah,
so
and that's 1 week out from its release.
Yeah.
So, like, they're going to want to make a sequel, but I think it's a fine movie. I don't think that they should. I don't see how you make it work, but that's just me.
I will say this about the movie. Maybe not so much about the movie, but in general about this is kind of the difference between having a budget behind your marketing. because right. Green Room made $3.2 million total across the board at the box office. So, like, Don't Breathe was able to get out there. They were able to kind of, you know, get this trailer in front of people and get people excited for it. And it's going to do way better than Green Room, even though Green Room is probably a better movie than this across the board.
I think it's...
And people will remember this more than they will Green Room, which is maybe a little bit of a shame.
Well, maybe on a wider scale, but for me, I don't know. It's Green Room. Like, I'm going to remember Green Room.
We'll remember Green Room. Like, and we probably will remember Don't Breathe too, because they're both pretty fun horror thrillers.
Yeah.
But I mean, just in general, like on a big scale populace, like more people have seen Don't Breathe, and like Green Room is going to become this like weird cult thing.
Well, that's why I'm going to keep talking about Green Room until everyone sees it. So. But that's the thing. It's marketing, but it's also Don't Breathe is in every theater. So I don't know if that's marketing or what, but like Green Room is definitely not in every theater. Like you got to see
I mean, it's just having, I don't know who actually was in charge of distribution on this, but Screen Gems, which is they're a pretty big one.
And their marketing had to be bigger than the actual movie budget, because like there was tons of ads for it, and they were great. It was a great trailer. So
yeah, and Sony Pictures actually distributed it. So I don't know who did Green Room, but my guess is that they didn't have Sony backing them on this. So
I want to say it was A24, the people that did like. Ex Machina, another small movie.
It was A24, so it's a small distributor. Like they just don't have the money to get their prints into a lot of theaters, and sometimes that can be rough.
Yeah, but they're putting out great movies, so I'm happy at the very least. So, I guess final score, Chris.
I mean, despite us kind of like. Coming down on it a little bit. I really liked it. I'm going to go with a 4. It's definitely worth seeing. Like, it's one of the better horror films of the year. Not the best, but it's definitely up there.
Yeah. I wrestle with it, and I'm coming down 4, too. It's just, it's very well-crafted, and it is fun. It's a fun mainstream horror movie. So, it's definitely worth checking out, for sure. But, like, after you do that, go see Green Room.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so that'll be that for Don't Breathe. And I don't know, what do you want to talk about next? We actually saw a decent amount of, so we might not even get to them all.
Do you want to touch on the night of? Is that what it was?
I do. The Night of. We keep like forgetting it to the last minute. So I don't want to say too much, cause I know you have not seen it.
Yeah. And I am going to sit down and watch it. I think all eight episodes are all up on HBO Go. So
yeah, you're in for a treat. I talked to Mr. Too Fresh into it the other night, and he stayed up till 5 a.m. watching it. He watched the whole thing at once. So, anyways though, yeah, mainly I was worried how it would wrap up. Like, would it be satisfying? And I found the ending to be very satisfying. I think that show is great. Like, I think it's fantastic. I hope that they honestly don't do more, but there's already talk of it. Fine as it was. It was a great, courtroom drama, prison drama, and an overall critique of the justice system, kind of like how The Wire was, where it just shows how someone innocent going through the system, how it could just destroy your life.
Right.
And I really, really enjoyed the last episode, which is almost 2 hours long. There were some people that did not like the show, and I don't understand. Like, I listened to some reaction podcasts where they just thought it was terrible. Like, they did not like, or not terrible, but a very mixed bag. And I didn't feel that way at all. And I also saw some reaction from people like right after the show on Twitter. Like, I was just looking up the hashtag The Night Of, And there weren't a lot of people that were like, shit, because they never told us who the killer was. What the show was about. Two, they totally show you who the fucking killer was. So I don't know what the fuck people were missing. Like, it's left somewhat ambiguous, but it's very much like you know who the killer is at the end. There's, in my opinion, no clue about who the killer is. And that's really the boot. It's not about who did it. It's about this guy, this kid that gets caught up for a murder that he, that we and he thinks he didn't commit. It's hard for him to say because he was blackout drunk when this murder happens. And he wakes up. And he wakes up in her in this girl's kitchen, and he goes up to say goodbye to her, and she's stabbed 22 times. And hurt that he wouldn't do something like that, but he can't remember. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, anyways, whatever. But I loved it. Like, I think you'll enjoy it, Chris. I don't know. There's a little bit like too much with the one lawyer played by John Turturro. He has eczema in it, like the skin condition.
Right.
And the show does spend a crazy amount of time talking about his eczema for no real reason.
Just
but other than that.
Huh.
I guess it was supposed to be a metaphor for like the justice system is this disease that's fucked up that you can't get rid of. That's one interpretation I heard, but it's just I took it as like a character trait that they were giving the guy, like to have his character be more specific. They just kind of spent a little too much time on it.
Okay.
But other than that, though, like I really enjoyed his character's arc. Like, and he's like this fucking ambulance chaser lawyer who is really working his first real case, where he's not just trying to do a plea bargain. He's actually trying to defend a guy that he believes is innocent. And he's not as good. He's not like a real lawyer, you know. He's like basically like this two-bit lawyer who's up to, you know, trying to step up his game. I don't know. I thought the show was fantastic, and I also love the fact that it was only 8 episodes for the whole story. So they do have to cover a lot of ground in those 8 episodes, and sometimes you're not sure how much time passes between scenes and between episodes. Like,
okay.
A whole lot of time passes, and you're like, how much time passes? Like a week, a month? I don't know. But, in it too, that is very good. Like, I liked his character, like directing, like fucking unbelievably good. So I'll be interested to hear what you think of it. I thought it was great. Like, I had none of the complaints that some people did have coming out of it. I thought it was the best TV show I've seen this year. So
all right,
there you go. That's that. What we got talk about Clown. I want to hear about
you want to hear about Clown.
Sure.
So, so Clown is a horror film, by a guy named John Watts. He is the director of the upcoming Spider-Man movie, Homecoming, the big, one that kind of takes place in the Marvel universe. Anyway, I think this was a couple years ago. He released a fake trailer for a movie called Clown, and he attributed it to Eli Roth. So he like the trailer kind of comes across, and it, like, you know, it's showing you what this movie's about, but it says that it's been directed by Eli Roth, and Eli Roth evidently got a hold of this. Like, people told him about it, and he's like, well, one, I didn't make this, but this is a cool concept. So he went to this guy, and he helped get this movie made under the Weinsteins, and so that's the overall kind of like how this thing got made, which I think is pretty cool by itself.
Yeah.
What it is, though, is there's this guy, he has a family, his son is having a birthday party, they're supposed to have a clown show up at the party, the clown cancels, and they're kind of left needing some sort of entertainment. The dad, he's renovating a house. He's looking around. He's kind of annoyed that, you know, the entertainment's falling through. And he finds what he thinks is this old clown costume. And he puts it on. And he goes, he entertains the kids at the party. Everything seems good, but he can't get it off. Like, this thing just won't come off. And what it turns out is that it's actually the skin of a demon. And now the demon has infused himself into this body. And he wants to eat children. Like, nice. It's a pretty messed up concept. It's a fun, like, 90, 95 minutes or so. It's kind of dumb, but I think that it mostly works for, like, if you can kind of be like, one, why would a kid want a clown at his birthday party? They do set up, like, a history for this. Like, what is the demon? Oh, it was this demon, the coin, and it kind of looks like a clown, but it was evil and, like, a scary clown. And Peter Stormare, who, if you played Until Dawn, he was in that as the psychologist. He's in this here. He plays like this crazy guy who has been protecting the suit for all these years, and he knows what evil is inside of it. And there's some really goofy and gory scenes in the movie. It's fun. It's not anything super special, but I enjoyed it for what it was, like 90, 95 minutes of stupidity. Some of the special effects are pretty good, like the makeup effects. So
they're doing like practical gore and stuff like that in it?
Yeah, like, I mean, like, you see his face kind of like devolving, and he turns more and more into the coin. And there are definitely some scenes where, you know, he's attacked somebody, and that he's like eating their, it's spitting out their bones, and it's kind of gross, but it's fun. There is a goofy scene where Kent, who is the clown, he is in like a Chuck E. Cheese. I think it might even be Chuck E. Cheese. And he gets into like the ball pit area, like the climby thing above the ball pit, and he's like hunting kids in there. It's really stupid and fun, but it gets so dumb. And it's kind of how you expect it to end. Like, there's, you know, it is what it is, but it, you know, if you're looking for a dumb, fun horror film, this will fill 90 minutes nicely. So I'd go right. 3 on it. Yeah.
It's 3. Really, yeah, stupid, it sounds, though. I mean, I kind of know what I'm getting going in a way, so it sounds like right up my alley. That sounds like a good time.
Yeah, it's not, like, don't go in, like, expecting anything, like, super fantastic. Like, it's, I'll say this, it's better than Ross's last couple films, so there's that.
Okay.
And it's fun. Like, evidently Eli Roth is in this movie. I don't remember seeing him in it, but he's evidently in it as well. Yeah.
That director, John Watt, did a movie called Cop Car. I think that was his first movie.
Okay.
Before, I don't know if he shot, because Clown has been sitting shelved for a couple of years. But that movie's pretty interesting. I thought it was definitely well-directed. Have you heard of it, or have you seen it?
No, I'm looking it up now. Kevin Bacon, evidently.
Yeah, it's like this crazy guy, like bad guy. I'm trying to remember the details, but it's basically like these two kids find a cop car in the middle of a cornfield, and they like steal it for them because of that. It's pretty good, actually. It's a pretty solid little genre movie. Clown. One thing when you were talking about Clown that reminded me, I wanted to say about Don't Breathe is that Don't Breathe is surprisingly bloodless for a lot of it. Like, there's like no gore. Like, and I was kind of disappointed by that, because, like, I don't know, is all the violence was like gunshots, or like the one part, like, he uses garden shears and he, like, they cut away from when he actually stabs the person with it. Like,
yeah. Well, and there,
did you have that reaction?
No. Well, I mean, I did notice that it was very bloodless, but I seeing why they cut away, because you know, if they had not cut,
yeah, away, I know why. Yeah.
It's a misdirection thing. And I, yes, that would have been super satisfying to see him use some garden shears on somebody. But for how that scene plays out, it wouldn't have worked, unfortunately.
But I guess the reason that scene sticks out to me, because I was like, oh, finally there's going to be some like blood and guts in this.
and then they cut away.
I understand why they did for that one. I'm just saying in general, like a lot of the violence is just like him chasing them around with a gun, which is makes it lean more towards a thriller than horror sometimes. It's
just
weird, but
yep.
Did you have another movie, Chris?
I did. I saw, and I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but I saw Batman: The Killing Joke, which is the animated version of trying to think of Alan Moore's classic graphic novel. I believe this came out like the graphic novel came out in like the 80s. It was a pretty big deal. I think it's lost a lot of its pull. In fact, I think a lot of Alan Moore stuff may have lost a lot of its pull. This sports Kevin Conroy as the voice of Batman, Mark Hamill as the Joker. I thought, look, it's been getting a lot of shit reviews. Let's take a look at it. And it's not good. it's not good at all. Hamill is great as the Joker, as always. Conroy also as Batman. But just they change things about – one, the story of The Killing Joke doesn't necessarily work today in Batman. Like in the canon of the comic books, it just doesn't really fit anymore. Like they've even pulled away. Like, so it's the story of, there's more to it, but Barbara Gordon gets, paralyzed in that. And she ultimately becomes Oracle. She gets shot by the Joker, and they've retconned that in the actual books now. Like, Barbara Gordon is back to being Batgirl. Does not, like, she can walk again. Like, that stuff has all kind of been wiped away. And in this, they do some weird things where they have Batgirl sleep with Batman. And Barbara Gordon is, they make her a little bit older here, but she's always kind of, been much younger than Bruce Wayne. And then not only do they like have the two of them sleep together, but then she kind of becomes this, like, I'm going to chase after you. Why aren't you paying attention to me? Like, all we had was sex. It's just sex. Like, come on, pay attention to me. I'm Batgirl. I can handle this. Like, it's really weird. Like, and it doesn't belong, and it's not from the original book anyway. Like, it's really weird that they added that in. And I did not like that, because they actually do a pretty good job of portraying Batgirl early on in the movie. And then this happens about 20 minutes in, and it like just kills everything about her. And then it just kind of becomes this, Joker shot Batgirl, Batman needs to chase after him. Oh, and he's also kidnapped Commissioner Gordon. And it's just like, in terms of animation, it looks great. Voice acting's fantastic. It's just not a good story. And the changes they've made to it are bad. Like, it's not good. I'm going to go.
I heard nothing. What you're saying is kind of what I've heard. Not good. And I don't have any, I never read The Killing Joke, so I'll be fine missing out on that one.
Yeah. And I generally don't get in, like, there's a huge long list of like Batman cartoons and stuff. I generally don't watch them, but this one was getting a lot of buzz negatively, but
yeah.
What movie was I going to see? I think I had gone to see Star Trek back in July, and I was wearing a Batman t-shirt, and one of the guys at the movie theater was like, "Yo, man, like your t-shirt." yeah, you know they're showing The Killing Joke next week, right? No, I didn't. But I'm glad I did not pay to go see this in the movie theater and instead Redboxed it. So
I had no idea it was in the theater. Wow.
Yeah, it was like a one night only thing. So like one of those Fandango.
Oh, gotcha.
Fathom events. That's what they're called.
We'll always have Mask of Phantasm. That was cool.
Yeah.
At least at the time, I remember.
Did you see anything else?
Yeah, I'll try to be quick on this. I started in on the Before trilogy from Richard Linklater, the director of Boyhood and Days Confused, etc.
Right, and this is his trilogy of like kind of romance movies that take place over, I guess, every 10 years.
Yeah, yeah, it checks in on these two people every 10 years or so. I think there's like 9 years between the first two. Yeah, let's say 10 years. First one, which is called Before Sunrise, which came out in 1995. And it is Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. They're two people traveling through Europe. They meet on a train. They kind of hit it off on this train, and they decide to get off in Vienna and spend the night together. Just kind of going around exploring the city. And it's an hour and 45 minutes of two people walking around talking, which may sound boring, but that's kind of what Richard Linklater movies are. They don't have plots. They're just about
stuff.
Yeah, stuff. But sound boring, but to me, mystery between Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. They feel like they're two young people that are really hitting it off, like, you know, real chemistry between them. On top of that, they're like super, their conversations are interesting. They talk about smart shit. It's intelligent conversations. So it's like I like really enjoyed the time I spent with them as they're just walking around this beautiful city. Like they're going to like, they go to a carnival and they go on a Ferris wheel. They go to a bunch of bars. They go out on a boat, like, you know, shit like that. And conversations that they have, they're like, you know, they're just weird things where he's like, one thing I thought of was, you know, like people believe in reincarnation, right? But if you think about it, like, you know, thousands of years ago, there was probably only like a million people. But now there's like, you know, 5 billion people. So like what are like, if we're the same souls are being reincarnated, does that mean that we're just a fraction of earlier souls? Like, just like, like that, you know what I mean? Like, and,
right.
And there is the whole like kind of bittersweet realization that these two are going separate ways in the morning. He's from Texas and she's from Paris. So they're having this wonderful night together where they're falling in love, but you know that it's going to end. Their trip's going to be over.
Right.
And they even have really intelligent conversations about that where he's like, you know, we're really enjoying our company together right now, but what if we did get together? You think that like 10, 20 years down the road that you're going to feel the same way? He's like, you'll probably come to hate things about me and the things that you find charming, you'll find super annoying down the road. And just like really, I thought like really interesting conversations about just, you know, life and love and shit like that. And it comes to the ending where they have to go their separate ways. And I thought it was really good. Like I said, it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea, but it does have that super rare 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. With the audience percent is not far behind. So I guess it is very well liked in general. And I did just before tonight watch the sequel to that, which is called Before Sunset, even better. So
yeah,
I don't know if we want to save that till next week. We could talk about it.
Let's save that there. So I don't know if we're going to have a whole lot next week. So
yeah, it might be quiet. But yeah, just, you know, little teaser. I think that the sequel, I think, is even more fantastic. It's shorter. It's only an hour and 20 minutes. And it honestly made me love the first movie more. It made me just like really fall in love with these movies. And I cannot wait to see the third one. So
cool.
Yeah, we'll talk more about it next week, I guess.
All right.
That'll have to do it for this week.
Yeah. So we'll be back next week. I'm gonna try and see the Jungle Book, so
okay. I have no big plans other than that. Like, but the next movie I'm for sure going to see in the theater is Blair Witch, which is like 2 weeks away. So
yeah, it's gonna be a lot of like kind of DVD releases and stuff for the next couple weeks, so
which is fine.
Yeah. All right. Guess we'll be back next week then.
All right.
Movie dudes.